So an angel showed up at your door and you had a great conversation. You learned a lot. And the next thing you know, another angel shows up. And you're thinking, what did I do to deserve this? How great is it that I've got two angels back to back that show up? And so you tell the angel that this is great. Thank you for coming. What did I do to deserve this? He says, well, we angels work together. And oftentimes when one angel shows up, another one does too. I understand the other angel was helping you to see some things about what God wanted you to do before you died. What was it you learned from that other angel? He says, well, mainly he just quoted me a bunch of scriptures, but I got a lot out of it. You know, I got a lot out of it. We quoted 1 John 4:7. It says, beloved, let's love one another, for love is of God. Everyone who loves is born of God, and he that does not love does not know God, for God is love. In James 4:11, he said, I need to really be careful about what I say if I'm going to do the right thing. It says, beloved, don't speak evil against each other, dear brothers and sisters. If you criticize and judge each other, you're criticizing and judging God's law of love. Your job is to obey the law, not decide whether it applies to you. And what right do you have to judge your neighbor? It really showed me that I need to imitate Christ in my life. It showed me that as he gave himself as a loving sacrifice and humbled himself as a sacrifice before all of mankind, then I need to have that same attitude that he had in order to show that I love. I need to really demonstrate love and not just talk about it. Do you really believe that? So, well, yeah, well, of course I do. But didn't I hear you running down some of the leaders in the church you go to? Didn't I hear you talking badly about them and you didn't have much good to say? And that. Well, they're the leaders, though. I mean, they deserve it, actually, because, I mean, they even said they deserve it. They even said it was their fault that all this stuff happened. So I was just joining in and saying, yeah, it's their fault, all right. I mean, they're the ones that need to go, oh, whoa, don't get excited. Don't get excited. I agree with you. I'm there for you. I'm with you. I understand what you're talking about. Don't need to get defensive. You know, this whole thing just isn't fair. You want to know the truth? I came here today to help you out a bit. I know the other angel meant well, but the other angel only showed his side of the story. And I want you to know that I'm here for you. And I want you to know the other side of all this stuff that's going on. I want you to know the whole truth. I want to shed some light on this subject. Well, really? You know, actually, I'm kind of glad you're here because I was getting a little bit nervous about all this love stuff. You know, this stuff about forgiveness and all that type of thing. I mean, that's maybe going just a little bit too far. It's like, what are they trying to pull on me with this stuff about love and humility and all that? Exactly. But I'll tell you what, that's been going on for years. For years, they've been saying, you know, just submit. Forgive. I mean, they've been saying that all along. It just, if somebody does you wrong, just accept it. You know? They've been doing this stuff for quite a while. Just trust God and everything will be okay. I mean, do you really believe that? I've been hearing this stuff forever. But I'll tell you, I just haven't been sitting back doing nothing about it. I mean, I'm coming back. You know, I could tell stories. I could tell you things. Do you remember about Daniel? Well, yeah, I don't know about Daniel. What about it? Let me tell you this story. Turn to Daniel 10. Turn to Daniel 10. You know, when somebody gives you this love stuff, not talking nasty and all that type of thing, I want you to know that with Daniel, we were there for him. We? Yeah, me and the other angels. We were there for Daniel. Daniel 10 and verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Cyrus, king of Persia, Daniel had another vision. He understood that the vision concerned events to happen in the future, times of war and great hardship. And verse 2, and when this vision came to me, I, Daniel, had been mourning for 3 whole weeks. I looked up and saw a man dressed in linen clothing. And verse 11, and the man said to me, Daniel, you're very precious to God. So listen carefully to what I say to you. Stand up, for I have been sent to you. And he said this to me, and I stood up, still trembling. Oh, you mean so Daniel had an angel sent to him just like that angel was sent to me earlier, right? He says, yeah, that's it. So not only that, it was the same angel who was sent to Daniel was the one talking to you earlier. It gets more interesting. Daniel 10, verse 12, he said, the angel, don't be afraid, Daniel. Since the first day you began to pray for understanding and to humble yourself before God, your request was heard in heaven, and I have come to answer you in prayer. Verse 13, but for 21 days the spirit prince of the kingdom of Persia blocked my way. Then Michael, one of the archangels, came to help me, and I left him there with the spirit prince of the kingdom of Persia. So this angel was sent to God, sent from God to Daniel, and Daniel started fasting about this and praying about it, and then another angel came and stopped Daniel's angel for 3 weeks, and he couldn't get to Daniel because that angel was keeping him from the message delivered by God. He says, yeah, exactly. It's more that prince of Persia. He said, that's me. I was there for Daniel. I was trying to keep Daniel from all this love stuff. I had Daniel's back. I was trying to protect him from all those words about God loving him and really caring for him. You don't think God really cared for him, did you? Verse 19, Daniel 10. Don't be afraid, he said, for you're very precious to God. Peace. Be encouraged. Be strong. Verse 20, the angel replied, do you know why I've come? Soon I must return to fight against the spirit of the prince of the kingdom of Persia. And after that, the spirit prince of the kingdom of Greece will come. Verse 21, meanwhile, I tell you what is written in the book of truth. He says, no one helps me against these spirit princes except Michael, your spirit prince. Well, it sounds great. It sounds like God was sending help to Daniel. It sounds as though he was going to answer his prayer and that he's going to rescue him. And then he says to look into the book of truth, and we wanted to know truth, right? So we're looking in the book of truth. Be strong. Help us. That we matter to God. Well, you know, if you matter so much to God, why does he let you go through all this stuff? If you matter so much to God, why does he let you suffer? If you matter so much to God and he really cares that much for you, like that angel said to Daniel, then why does God keep things from you? Keep things from me. What do you mean keep things from me? What does God keep from me? You remember Adam and Eve, right? You know, God set them there in the garden, and he told them what they should think. He told them how they should act. He told them where they should live, how they should live. You know, but he didn't tell them the whole story. Thankfully, my boss was there to tell them the rest of the story. Genesis 3:1, it says, "And Satan said to the woman, 'Has God indeed said you shall not eat of every tree of the garden?'" God was trying to keep them from something. And you know what happened as a result? They got their freedom. You know, if it weren't for us, if it weren't for Satan, my boss out there telling him, you know, you can't eat of that, or you can eat that, and God says not to, they'd probably still be stuck in that garden. You know, but I gave them the world. I gave them everything. They got to go out in the world, and they got that because we offered them that instead of God just trying to keep them from, you know, in his little realm and what he wanted them to do. God is so unfair. I hadn't looked at it that way before. I can help you see all kinds of things. I can give you the other sides of the stories that are out there. God didn't call my boss the light bringer for nothing. Oh, he brings light to you so you can really see what's going on. You know, he's still trying to keep you from seeing the real light. 2 Corinthians 11:4. You know, he wrote this so when the real light came to you, you wouldn't listen. 2 Corinthians 11:4. It says, "No wonder, for Satan himself transforms himself into an angel of light. Therefore, it's no great thing if his ministers also transform themselves into ministers of righteousness, whose end will be according to their works." I mean, God says that as though it's something bad. Yeah, it's funny how people twist the truth, isn't it? You know, my boss and I get a bad rap. You know, we're always getting this bad rap as though we're the bad guys. You know, we were even there for Jesus. We were there for him. We were trying to cover his back, and he didn't even appreciate it. So what do you mean? You know, you've probably read this dozens of times. Maybe it's gotten by you. Maybe you failed to appreciate our efforts as Jesus failed to appreciate our efforts. Matthew 16 and verse 21. Matthew 16, 21. You know, I'm not going to talk about all the times. I mean, you know, my boss tried to give Jesus the world too. Remember they were up there on that mountain and Jesus was fasting all that time? And I told him I'd give him the whole world right then. Just like I gave Adam and Eve, but he wouldn't have any of it. He just rejected me. Matthew 16, 21. "From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and the chief priests and the scribes, and be killed and raised the third day." And you know what? How fair is that? How fair is that? I mean, he should suffer. I mean, he was a good guy. And yet, he was beaten, and he was cursed, and he was killed. I mean, we tried to stop that. We were the good guys here. I got Peter to help. Verse 22. "And Peter took Jesus aside and began to rebuke him, saying, 'Far be it from you, Lord, this shall not happen to you.'" We just didn't want Jesus to suffer. We didn't want people to treat him bad. It's all we were trying to do. And what does he do? He comes off on us. Verse 23, he turned to Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan. You are an offense to me, for you're not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men." Now, all we tried to do is tell him how unfair it was that he would be treated badly. and that he needed to just pay attention to what was going on. We were there for him. We had his back. What does he do? He comes off on us and tells us we got the bad attitude because we didn't want him to suffer. He should have thanked Peter for what Peter was doing. A man just doesn't suffer for no reason, just sit there and take it. I mean, how natural is that? And the thing is, he tells you, you should do the same thing. 1 Peter 2 and verse 20. 1 Peter 2 and verse 20. I mean, not only is he willing to lay down and just take it and to suffer, but he's trying to get you to do the same thing. 1 Peter 2:20 says, "For when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, it is commendable before God." Now he's trying to tell you that if you're a good person and you suffer, God says, "Hey, that's all right." How fair is that? And it says, verse 21, "For to this you are called." I mean, he says not only is it a good idea, but he said you're called to this, that it is going to happen to you. And there'll be circumstances in life where you will be persecuted for no good reason. Sometimes you'll be persecuted for a good reason. "For to this you are called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was deceit found in his mouth." Verse 23, "Who when he was reviled, did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges righteously." Can you imagine doing something like that? It's just ridiculous. You ever read about Job? I mean, let me tell you about Job. You see what God did to him? Turn to Job 1. Job 1, the stories are right out there for you to read. I'm not making stuff up. Job 1. Verse 1, New Living Translation. "There was once a man named Job who lived in the land of Uz, and he was blameless, a man of complete integrity." So here was one of these guys that wasn't sinning. Job 1 verse 6, "One day the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them." I gotta say, when one of us is there, one of them's there, another one comes along very many times. Okay, you can count on it. Verse 7. "The Lord said to Satan, 'Where have you come from?' Satan answered, 'Lord, from roaming to and through the earth, going back and forth in it.' The Lord said to Satan, 'If you consider my servant Job, there's no one like him on earth. He's blameless and upright and a man who fears God and shuns evil.'" Now, if there's anybody that you ought to just leave alone and bless, it ought to be a guy like this, right? But no, it's not what God does. Verse 9, Satan says to Job, "Fear God for nothing. Have you not put a hedge about him and his household and everything he has? You've blessed the work of his hands." You know, he's been going along just fine. Goes to church every Sabbath. Serves the widows. Does good stuff. Preaches good sermons. What do you ever do wrong? Verse 11, "But stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face," because that's what the natural, real man does. And the Lord said to Satan, "Very well then, everything he has is in your hands, but on the man himself don't lay a finger." And Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. Well, wasn't God just testing Job? I mean, wasn't that a good thing? To see where he was? Think about it. If Job was so righteous, why did he take away everything he had? Huh? I mean, if God is so good and God really cares that much, why did he allow everything to be taken away from him? Can you tell me that's just treatment? It gets worse. Job chapter 2. After all the stuff had been taken away from him, one day the members of the heavenly court came together again to present themselves before the Lord, and the accuser, Satan, came among them. "Where have you come from?" the Lord asked Satan. And Satan answered, "I've been patrolling the earth and watching everything that's going on." Verse 3, and the Lord asked Satan, "Have you noticed my servant Job? In spite of everything you've taken away, he's the finest man in all the earth. He's blameless. A man of complete integrity. He fears God and always stays away from evil. And he's maintained his integrity even though you urged me to harm him without a cause." Wow, I've never noticed that before. God took away all his stuff. Well, God seems a little unjust here, doesn't he? Let all that stuff be taken away, and he couldn't have done it. Satan couldn't have done it without God's permission. Yeah, and thing is, Job just sits there and takes it. Can you imagine what kind of man that is? Just sit there and take that type of thing? We tried to get Job to wake up and smell the coffee, believe me. I mean, we were there for Job. I mean, it looks like we were, like, treating him bad. We were just trying to, you know, give him some courage here. Stand up for what's right. Stand up for what's his. Verse 4, Satan replied to the Lord, "Skin for skin, a man will give up everything he has to save his life. But reach out and take away his health, and surely he will curse you to your face." Oh, he'll stand up. Verse 6, "All right, do with him as you please," the Lord said to Satan, "but spare his life." So Satan left the Lord's presence. He struck Job down with terrible boils from head to foot, and Job scraped his skin with a piece of broken pottery as he sat in the ashes, and the ashes was all he had left. His job was taken away. His home was taken away. His livelihood was taken away. His children were taken away. But even that didn't wake Job up. I mean, we tried to send his wife to help us out here. I mean, get some perspective on this whole thing. Verse 9, his wife said to him, "Are you still trying to maintain your integrity? Curse God and die." That's what a real man would do. But Job replied, "You talk like a foolish woman. Shall we accept only good things from the hand of God and never anything bad?" So in all this, Job said nothing wrong. Well, that was good, right? Good, are you kidding me? He had the same milquetoast attitude that Jesus had. Just sit there and take it when somebody says something against you, when somebody does something against you. I mean, what kind of an attitude is that? What kind of a man does that? You never found my boss doing that. I mean, my boss never just stood there and took it. You wouldn't believe what they did to us. You want another story? Oh, I can tell you a story. A long time ago, God gave my boss the whole world. And he sent a bunch of us to be there with him, and we had control over the whole world. God gave it to us. That was our job. And what does he do? He takes it away. He takes away my job. How can he do that? His little thing is, he decides he's going to take away my job and give it to man? I mean, they weren't eternal angelic beings. Man, little twerps. I mean, these little things down there that die and rot and everything, and he gives it to them. What did they ever do to deserve my job? Just read it. Hebrews 2 and verse 5. Hebrews 2 and verse 5. I mean, God even had the gall to write it down. Hebrews 2 and verse 5, New Living Translation, says, "And furthermore, it is not angels who will control the future world we're talking about. It was our job. And now he took it away." Verse 6, "For in one place the scriptures say, 'What are people that you should think of them, or son of man that you should care for him?' And yet you have made them only a little lower than the angels, and then crowned them with glory and honor. Verse 8, you gave man authority over all things." Now when it says all things, it means nothing is left out. So man is going to have authority over the angels? I don't think so. "But we have not yet seen all things put under the authority." Verse 10, "God, for whom and through whom everything was made, chose to bring many children to glory. And it was only right that he should make Jesus, through his suffering, a perfect leader, fit to bring them to salvation." Jesus was willing to suffer to make himself lower than the angels, so that man could be over the angels. Verse 14, "Because God's children are human beings made of flesh and blood, the Son also became flesh and blood. For only as a human being could he die, and only by dying could he break the power of the devil, who has the power of death." He broke the devil's power by humbling himself and dying, by making himself lower. Verse 16, "We also know that the Son did not come to help the angels. He came to help the descendants of Abraham." Verse 17, "Therefore it was necessary for him to be made in every respect like us, his brothers and sisters, so that he could be our merciful and faithful high priest." Well, wow, that's really exciting. You mean God is going to make man to rule over the earth and to be ruling with God and to live with God forever? That's great. I just love this stuff. Did you even think about what you just read? Didn't you notice that, like, we were in charge, now we're not in charge anymore? And that you are going to rule over us? The world was ours, and God took it away. He can't do that to us. Believe me, buddy, I'm taking you down. There's no way you're going to rule over me. But I thought you were my friend. I thought you had my back. Well, it's not too late now, but look, you got to choose. I mean, you got to either follow my example, or you got to follow Christ's example. Which is it? You can't have both. I'll tell you, when God put us down, we didn't just sit there and take it. Isaiah 14. I could read you the whole story, but we'll just show you when my job was taken away, when Satan's job was in danger of being taken away, we stood up for ourselves. Isaiah 14 and verse 13. "You said in your heart, 'I will ascend to heaven above the stars of God. I will set my throne on high. I'll sit on the mount of the assembly in the far reaches of the north.'" Verse 14, "I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will make myself like the Most High." They're not putting me down. They're not making me lower. They're not going to try to humble me. And you know what we got for just standing up for our rights? It says in Revelation 12:4, his tail swept away a third of the stars out of the sky and threw them down to the earth. I mean, of all the angels that were there with God, a third of them came with Lucifer. A third of them knew that God wasn't fair, that God wasn't just. And a third of the angels can't be wrong, can they? Yet they just threw us away. We didn't take it then, and we're not taking it now. Revelation 12 and verse 7. Revelation 12 and verse 7. You know, I told you at the very beginning that when one angel comes, you got another angel coming along with them. It happened then. It's happening now. And it'll happen wherever God's people are. That when you got a good one, you're going to have a bad one. Revelation 12, verse 7. And war broke out in heaven, and Michael and his angels fought with the dragon. And the dragon and his angels fought. But they did not prevail, nor was any place found for them in heaven. And verse 9, so the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old, that devil and Satan who deceives the whole world, and he was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. We were just thrown away for no reason. And it'll happen to you too, unless you stand up for your rights. You got to stand up for your rights. Revelation 12 and verse 10. You want to know where we are now? Or at least pretty close to it. And in principle, we've been there for a long time. Revelation 12 and verse 10. I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren who accused them before our God day and night has been cast down. Verse 11, and they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, by Jesus' humble sacrifice, by Jesus' love, and by the word of their testimony, by those who accepted that sacrifice and imitated his attitude and his heart and his mind and humbled themselves. And they did not love their lives till death. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you that dwell in them. Can you believe it? He's trying to tell you to lay down your life for your brothers, and for all of mankind, just like Jesus did his life. He's trying to tell you to make yourself of no reputation, just like Jesus did. He's trying to tell you to submit to one another, just like Jesus did. He's trying to tell you to just sit there and trust God, just like Jesus did, instead of lashing back. Well, you just go ahead and serve. You just go ahead and love. You just go ahead and trust God and see what happens to you. I'll tell you, we're not done with you yet. Revelation 12:12. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows he has but a short time. Verse 13, when the dragon saw he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the man-child. I thought you were my friend. I thought you had my back. Well, you got to choose. You can't have it both ways. You can't sit there on the fence between God and my world and Satan's world. You either have to believe all that love stuff. either have to believe all that stuff about forgiving your brother who sinned against you. You have to believe all that stuff about laying down your life for somebody else. That stuff about submission. You got to believe that stuff about speaking good things about other people instead of speaking evil and gossip. You've either got to believe all that stuff about not slandering and all those other things that he says. You either got to believe that or you can stand up for yourself. You can show everyone that you don't have to have the same attitude that Christ had. You can show them that you can gossip and talk about whoever you want. You don't have to forgive somebody. You don't have to just sit there and take it. That you can, if you can just like help Satan to be the accuser of the brethren, maybe we'll leave you alone then. If you can help us expose everybody else's sins, maybe we can leave you alone. But I tell you, if you're not going to get in there and help us, then that means you're against us. And we're going to go after you. So what is it going to be? God's way or Satan's way?